Okay, dear dumb friends, we are going to start the Sutta teaching session. We'll first of all pay homage to the Buddha. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Ekayano ayam bhikkave maggo sattanam visuddhiya soka pariddavanam samatikkamaya dukkha domanassanam atthagamaya nyayassa adhigamaya nibbanassa sacchikiriyaya yadidam chattaro satipatthanati. Dear Dhamma friends, as you all know, we are discussing various suttas, particularly in order to take some benefit, some sort of a guidance to our practice. And as a result, we have discussed Sabbasava Sutta and again Kayagata Sati Sutta, so that we are able to get some insights from those suttas to our practice. And nowadays we are discussing Satipatthana Sutta, which is one of the very important sutta, especially for mindfulness practice, and again in total to our whole practice, meditation practice. So basically, Satipatthana Sutta Buddha has preached while he was in a country called Kuru and a village called Kammasa Dhamma. So there are very important suttas in this region Buddha has preached. Say for example, Aryavasa Sutta, that is another very profound sutta Buddha has taught at the same place in the country of Kuru, the village of Kammasa Dhamma. Now, Satipatthana Sutta also Buddha has preached in this place, and there Buddha himself has taken the subject, topic, and then started to explain. Basically, Buddha says, Ekayano ayam bhikkave maggo. There is a direct path to realization. Sattanam suddhya, for the purification of the beings. Soka pariddhavanam samatikkamaya, in order to transcend sorrow and lamentation. Dukkha domanassanam atthagamaya, in order to remove suffering and various types of despair. Nyayassa adhigamaya, in order to realize the path, the correct path. And to nibbanassa sacchikriya, in order to realize the nibbana. So there is a direct path, there is sort of unwavering path, straight path, and that is nothing but Chattaro Satipatthana, four foundations of mindfulness. So in this section we can understand there are particularly four types of Satipatthana mentioned: Kayanupassana, Vedanupassana, Chittanupassana and Dhammanupassana. And now we are in the Kayanupassana section. So Kayanupassana section starts with Anapanasati, mindfulness on breathing. So mindfulness on breathing is very popular subject, and there are many thousands of yogis, practitioners are using mindfulness on breathing as their primary object, as their main meditation subject. So there are advantages that it is freely available for us. There are no any additional things to be gained. So we are from our birth time, so we are breathing. Now we are trying to use the same breathing process in order to improve our mindfulness. We already have a little amount of mindfulness, and we are now trying to stimulate it, now trying to improve it using mindfulness on breathing. So Buddha starts that in a very simple manner. So sato asa sati, sato passa sati. This practitioner mindfully breathing in and mindfully breathing out. So this simplicity is one of the key feature of this whole practice, where the simplicity of the practice takes us or leads us to very profound understanding. It is not the complexity taking us to the profound understanding, rather the simplicity taking us to a very profound understanding. So Satipatthana Sutta itself is described one after the other. There are various techniques, altogether 21 techniques, and each one we can say fairly a simple But it doesn't mean that it is easy to practice. So, as practitioners, you all know how difficult it is to keep your mind on breathing, because mind is not used to. Mind likes to stay in the past, proliferating various things which has happened in the past, or planning about the future, daydreaming, fantasizing. So all these things are something that mind is used to and mind likes to do. So we like to do that. But if someone asks to bring your attention to the breathing, so that is extremely boring and not interested. And again, that it is not exciting. So as a result, our attention again and again drifted towards the past or future, to here and there. So therefore, we can understand, even though the activity or the duty of us is to just keep our attention on breathing, implementation of that or practically involving in that is not that easy. So that requires years of practice in order to keep our attention on breathing. Now, if we are able to keep our attention on breathing, so then we can say 50 breaths, 200 breaths, 200 breaths, we can maintain our attention there. Again and again, breathing happens, naturally it happens, and we are keeping our attention on each breathing. So this actually helps to refine our mindfulness, establish our mindfulness again and again. So as a result, we start to live in the present moment. So whole breathing process happens in the present moment. So we are using that in a way to maintain our attention, our mind, our mental process also in the present moment. So this is the, in a way, the key behind this whole process, where we are using some sort of a bodily process which is verily happens in the present moment, and we are using that as an anchor for the mind to stay, for the mind to maintain its attention, so that mind also start to stay in the present moment. And then we discussed about various postures, and then we started various being mindful on daily activities. And likewise, Buddha has expanded mindfulness throughout the day. It is not just you are selecting a particular time and just being trying to mindful on that time. Rather, it is expected to maintain mindfulness as much as possible. Because if not, we are very much like living in a different world, living in a mind-made world, not in the reality, but rather in something else, somewhere else. But mindfulness helps us always to be grounded, always come into the present moment, always live with the reality. So otherwise, we are in a dream. So therefore, clear comprehension, sampajanya, helps us to further enhance that quality, where we are trying to be mindful on all daily activities. Then actually Buddha taking us to a different angle to this practice, where we have wrong notion about our body. Now Kayanupassana entirely depends on the body, or entirely using the body in order to develop mindfulness and wisdom. Now we are trying to look at the body in a different angle. So typically we have kind of a idea that this body is beautiful, this body is one thing, and I am beautiful than the other person, or I am ugly than the other person, I am taller than the other person. Likewise, we all have different perceptions about the body. Now Buddha is guiding us in order to penetrate those wrong perceptions and to come to a kind of a realistic understanding about the body. So he helps us to understand that this body contains various parts, and therefore it is not just one thing, so that our compactness view will be fairly broken, or fairly blurred, fairly weakened. And then again Buddha asks us to look at the body in a loathsome manner, where each part, if we consider, are not attractive, not beautiful, rather each part is fairly loathsome. So if one understands like that, then the possibility of lust and conceit arising is less. So if we have sort of overwhelming lust, burning lust, then it is difficult to practice anapanasati dhatu manasikara, like those fairly refined types of meditation. Rather, first of all, we need to bring our mind to the middle level, less free level. So on such occasion, we can practice patikula manasikara, or reflecting about the loathsomeness of the body, so that we are able to bring our mind back to the equanimity, back to the middle. And if one is able to practice it well, then further refined mindfulness help us to understand various element characteristics available in the body. Now, to this we can connect today's topic, so that is Navasivatika, nine types of corpses or nine stages of a corpse. So that is another way of looking at our life, because we all know that we as human beings, so we have very limited time to live. It is not that we are going to be eternal, rather our life is extremely short. Nowadays it may be 50 years, 60 years, 70 years, 80 years. And it is very rarely that one may live over 100 years. Now, if we consider this life in that angle, then most of the quarrels would be eliminated, because we all may understand that even though at the moment I am angry, I am trying to hold something, I am trying to own something, I want to possess something, still it is very short, it's very temporary, and I am going on a sort of a useless task, because ultimately I have to leave everything aside because my life is so short. But unfortunately, people don't look at the whole thing in that angle, but they rather obsessed with various attractive things, and they want to have more and more, possess more and more, and they are quarreling with each other because another person also likes the same thing that we like. So there's a huge competition about the resources, about the various sensual attractions, sensual pleasures. So as a result, the whole world in a big competition. Now, if we look at our body in a way that it is going to die, so then we are in a very different angle, in a different domain, where we are trying to look at this whole thing in a different angle. Now, in this Navasivatika section, Buddha asks us to look at the body once after it has passed away, once it is died. And first, it may become discolored and swollen, and that is, we can say, one stage. And after that, various oozing liquids going to come out, and then again it becomes more and more loathsome. Then bad smells are going out, and again various birds and animals start to come and eat the body, so it becomes more and more loathsome. And after that, various internal parts going to be appear. Now everything open, it is no more beautiful, rather all the internal parts are now visible and oozing and again swollen, and it is extremely unattractive and extremely loathsome. And after some time it is further decaying, and now different pieces appear at different places. And after that, now we can see the skeleton, and it is also extremely discolored and wrapped with tendons and all. And then after that, even the bones are broken into pieces. Now skeleton also we can't recognize, because all the different bones are scattered here and there. And ultimately, even those will be further decayed, and ultimately those will be converted to like parts or dust particles, even to going to like dust powder. And ultimately that is the sort of the destiny of this human body. Actually, it is common to any body, any being after death. So this kind of a decaying process is inevitable, and it is going on and on. And ultimately, it becomes completely absorbed to the earth. Now, nowadays, actually, we can't see this whole process because people are now trying to hide this reality, and they are covering the whole thing with beautiful wrappers, beautiful clothes, and putting incense in order to avoid sort of bad smell. So likewise, they do get involved funeral directors. Now, funeral directors are there, so they know how to beautify a dead body, and therefore the reality is hidden from us. But in old India, once a person passed away, they are not doing any such beautification. Rather, they simply take the body, the dead body, and they throw it in the cemetery and they come back. So the whole process is visible. The whole destiny is visible. And if anybody wants to remove their last, so they go in search of such a corpse, and now they start to reflect how this corpse is decaying. And as I said, so this practice has two angles in a way, two benefits in a way. One is that you can look at it in a loathsomeness aspect, where you may remove the lust. Typically, we are looking at our body as attractive and even others' bodies as attractive. But here, we are looking at the body in a loathsome manner, so that we get sort of a real understanding, the realistic understanding about the body. Now, that is one aspect. And on the other hand, more and more we understand that this body is a dead body. Now, this person may be, suppose, 70 years old, and he was living 70 years in this world, and he had his family, he has his education, and he has his, suppose, university education, he has his job, and he had his children, husband, wife, parents, his occupation, reputation, so etc. etc. So many things he had actually. But now everything gone. He's just a dead body. Now this, so if one is understanding in that angle, then we will understand that this death is inevitable. Even though we feel that we are living right now, we don't know when we are going to die. And again, we don't know how we are going to die. And again, we don't know at which place we are going to die. So likewise, if we consider the death, there are a lot of uncertainties involved in this death. And if we are able to look at it in that angle, then most of the time our conceit also will be removed. Because we are really conceited, thinking that I am an educated person, I am so and so, I am with this, I am with that, I am better than another person. So likewise, thinking in that angle, so we are so much conceited. But if we understand that this inevitable death is common to me, then such conceit does not find a place in our mind, and it may not stay longer in our mind, because we easily become well grounded, well sort of humble, because we know even though at the moment this body, my body, appear like beautiful, it has the fate of getting death, going to die. Now, inevitable death is another aspect of this meditation. Therefore, we can say one can look at the whole process in the asubha aspect, that is to recover, understand the loathsomeness, and again to understand the marana sati, that is the inevitable death. So when one is understanding like that, so then actually once, as I said, lust is impossible to stay in the mind. As I said, if the mind is fairly suffering with lust or burning with lust, so it is difficult to immediately practice anapanasati, immediately practice dhatu manasikara, because mind is not in a refined mode, mind is not in a wise mood. but it is fairly colored, fairly agitated because of lust. On such situation, one medicine, we can say, is either practicing Patikkula Manasikara to understand various parts of this living body as loathsome, or to use this kind of a situation, Navasivathika, to understand various stages of a corpse, a decaying corpse. So that is another aspect. Now, in the Buddha's time, this actually he has used certain dead bodies in order to give a strong or profound teaching to the others. So there is one prostitute called Sirima, and she was so beautiful. And even a monk got attracted to her. And this monk is now living with a lot of thoughts about this Sirima. And many people are actually being attracted to this Sirima. And so she is a very popular prostitute in that culture, in that area. So after some time, this lady passed away. And Buddha requested the king not to bury the body immediately, but rather protect it without allowing animals to come, and just to keep it for some time. Then after some time it become bloated, it become discolored, sullen. And at that time Buddha requested everybody to come closer to that body, to this Sirima's dead body. Now, with the order of the king, now many people are gathered there, including that monk who was thinking about Sirima. So now Buddha is also there. Now there's a huge gathering, and Buddha asks, who wants to have Sirima? No, nobody was interested. And actually Buddha first asks, who wants to have Sirima for 1,000? So in today's terms, we'll say $1,000. So for $1,000, so nobody came forward. Then Buddha reduced the price. Who wants to have her for $500? Nobody came forward. Say about $200, nobody. $100, nobody. $50, even nobody. Maybe $1, even nobody. How about having her free? Still no one came forward. But in the living time, there were many very rich people, even kings, come towards her and spend thousands of dollars, so I am using today's terminology, just for one night. But now, even for free, there is nobody come forward. And again, the body is entirely bloated, discolored, and oozing liquids, and extremely loathsome. So then Buddha gave a strong teaching there, so this is the fate of this body. Even though we've been attracted, we are like fools because we don't know the reality. So therefore, Buddha has used dead bodies to give some eye-opening lessons to the crowd, to the followers, so that they will understand the reality. Now, so couple of aspects, or in a way, a couple of benefits we can say of this practice is to remove lust, and again to remove conceit, and again to understand that everything is impermanent, everything is very temporary, this beauty is very temporary, this attractiveness is very temporary, this health is temporary, and all this strength is also very temporary. So whatever we attribute towards our body is extremely temporary. We don't know when we will lose it. So this is something that we can understand if one is practicing this kind of meditation technique. Now, actually here, Buddha again and again asks us to do a kind of a comparison. Ayam pikho kayo evam dhammo evam bhavi evam anati toti. Now we have a dead body in front of us, and we can recognize various decaying parts, loathsomeness, and now you compare. So in front I can see a corpse, and it is subjected to this kind of a situation, and it is common to my body as well. Now, that kind of a comparison is something that Buddha asks us to do again and again. So, at this particular meditation technique, so this comparison is the most important thing. So, not only that we are looking at the outside corpse, but rather again and again we are bringing that same reality to ourselves and applying the same reality to ourselves and to understand that this very body, my so-called my body, is also has the same fate. Also, we are subject to the same situation and is extremely temporary state that I am holding right now. So, the key feature here is Ayam piko kayo evang dhammo evang bhavi evang anatitoti. So, this body, so-called my body, is also the same like this in front corpse. And this my body also will ultimately come to the same state. So this is a kind of a comparison that Buddha requests to do while when one is engaged in this meditation. Now, again, there are a few aspects we can consider when we are discussing this meditation. So if you are a male, better to use a male dead body, and if you are a female, better to use a female dead body. Because at the beginning, if the mind is lustful, so it could be possible that even for a dead body, this lust might arise. Even for a dead body, this lust might increase. So such a kind of ignorance is there when mind is infatuated or the mind is colored with lust. So therefore, the advice is to use the same sex dead body. But on the other hand, if one is fairly wise, one can use the opposite sex dead body as well, because we are typically being attracted to opposite sex bodies, and when one is seeing what is the fate of such a body by seeing it's realistically on in front of oneself, so then a strong understanding is possible. So therefore, it's a kind of warning that given that one has to use the same sex, but on the other hand, if one is brave enough, one can use the opposite sex body as well. It is so powerful. It is so powerful because one being attracted towards an opposite sex person, but now we can see in front of us a dead body which is discolored, oozing, and bloated, and different parts scattered here and there. So there is nothing to be attracted to. The person that I am attracted has the same fate. That body also has the same fate. So such kind of a very direct, eye-opening kind of insight is possible on this kind of a meditation. Now, nowadays, anyway, we don't have these kinds of dead bodies available because people are using various techniques to avoid showing the reality. So within a couple of days, they take the dead body and cremate it. And as a result, we can't see this reality. So on the other hand, we can use various other techniques to understand this. There are a lot of photographs available about kind of a decaying corpses. And if one likes, one can use those pictures as well. And in a way, in this meditation, there's a kind of a visualization is there, where one can visualize various stages of dead body. If one can't see the real dead body, one can visualize how this body is subjected to various stages of decaying. So that is also there. But anyway, I like to make a warning here that we need to know the limit, because this kind of meditation can lead to kind of a depression in the mind and kind of even an anger in the mind, even hating one's body. So that is not expected from this meditation. So we should know the exact limit of this meditation. So only when mind is lustful or extremely conceited, we can use or we can apply this type of meditation technique. And when mind becomes again calm, quiet, equanimous, living in the middle, then we have to stop. So we should not practice this kind of a meditation just because it is known to us, just because it is mentioned in the book, because it can lose the balance of the mind. So maintaining the balance of the mind is very important, especially to maintain equanimity in the mind. So if you can remember, at the very beginning of the Satipatthana Sutta, Buddha mentioned Vinaya Loke Abhijja Domanassa. So in terms of the whole world, one shouldn't have any kind of lust, any kind of a greed, and again any kind of despair, any kind of resistance shouldn't be there in the mind. So therefore, this kind of meditation, actually, if we don't know the exact amount, then it might lead to kind of a depression or kind of a resistance towards the whole world, kind of a domanasa, despair. And again, even one might start to hate one's body. And even someone might even think of committing suicide. So that is not expected. Hating one's body or committing suicide or sort of getting depressed is not the aim of the meditation. Rather, we should know it as a medicine. So when one is sick, one is using medicine. But if one is not sick, not necessary to use medicine. Similarly, this meditation technique also has to be used wisely, so that only when it is necessary we can use and get the benefit, and after that we can keep it aside. Now, there are three aspects in a way, or three techniques in a way we can we described in this Kaya Nupassana. One is the this 32 parts, Patikkula Manasikara, where we are requested to see the body as various bodily parts. So this is one way. Then actually we are looking at the body in a loathsome aspect. So this is one type of meditation. And again in the Navasivatika, going somewhat closer to look at the body once it is passed away, once it is died, and at how the body is going through various stages, decaying stages. And that is another way. Now when one is practicing like this, slowly our lust will be removed, conceit will be removed, our mind can be taken to the equanimity, to the middle. And again, since our attention is again and again taken towards our own body, so mind starts to stay closer to the body or associate in the body. So once it is started to associate the body, then one can further refine that mindfulness, that attention, by paying attention to various element characteristics. Now, element characteristics are not prominent or visible when our mind is gross, when our mind is lustful, when our mind is subject to any kind of a distraction, then the element characteristics available in the body seems hidden from us. It is being covered from us. But more our mind associates the body, then this element characteristics become more and more visible, more and more prominent. And you can feel various element characteristics. Now you can actually turn your practice towards the Dhatu Manasikara, because the element characteristics are now visible and you are keeping your attention on those element characteristics. So once you keep going on in this process, more and more element characteristics are visible. Assume that at the beginning only a vibration was known, but you are using that vibration to further enhance your mindfulness, to refine your mindfulness. As a result, your attention is more and more maintained within the body. And now more element characteristics are going to be visible. Now not only say vibration, but even hardness, softness, roughness, smoothness, heaviness, lightness, say flowing, vibrations, movements. So likewise, so many element characteristics become evident. So slowly now we are bringing our meditation towards the Dhatu Manasikara. More and more elements are going to be visible. Their characteristics are going to be visible. And slowly, all are starting to tell us the same story. Everything is coming and everything is going. Everything appearing and then disappearing. Everything have the nature to arise and pass away. Samudaya dhamma anupasseva kayasmin viharati. Vaya dhamma anupasseva kayasmin viharati. Samudaya vaya dhamma anupasseva kayasmin viharati. So therefore, once we are able to refine our attention, maintain an equanimous mind, free from any despair, free from any attraction, lust, and we simply maintain an equanimous mind, concentrated mind. So this kind of a very refined understanding is possible. How all these element characteristics are subjected to arising and passing away. Now, if one is able to do like that, then here also we can say that one is using one's body in order to improve one's mindfulness, in order to improve wisdom further. So, because one has understood this body also subjected to decay, subjected to death, after the death it may go through kind of inevitable decaying process, a loathsome decaying process. So therefore no point of having any conceit or lust because of this body. How about using this same body to improve mindfulness, to improve wisdom? So this is a kind of view change happens in one's mind. Now he is using this body in order to improve wisdom, in order to improve mindfulness. So therefore Buddha mentions, Attikayoti va panassa sati pachupattita hoti, yavadeva jnana mattaya patisati mattaya. So one understands there is a body, it doesn't belong to me. It is simply subjected to various causes and conditions, and it has inevitable death. And one is using yavadeva jnana mattaya patisati mattaya. So one is using the body just to develop wisdom and again to have a stable mindfulness. So more and more, if one is developing such kind of a practice, instead of lust, instead of passion, one may have dispassion towards the whole thing. Not only this body, even to outside bodies, someone else's body, one may have a dispassion. Instead of passion, instead of lust, now one is maintaining kind of a dispassionate attitude towards the whole world, not attaching to anything. So assume that one is continuing one's practice, more and more a detached kind of mind, and further he is improving his wisdom, so that the disenchantment become more prominent, which is based on the understanding. And when it is coming to some amount of improvement or to some culmination, it is possible that mind may let go of the whole thing, not attaching to anything. Now in Kaya Anupassana we are mostly dealing with the body, and now mind may let go the body entirely, not attaching to it at all. If one is able to maintain such mind, such detached mind, completely free mind, released mind, so then Buddha says anisitocha viharati. So one is maintaining his attention unassociated, not attaching with anything. Nachakinchi loke upadhyati. He is not holding, he is not grasping anything in the world. So such state may be possible temporarily at the moment, temporarily at the beginning. Now, if one understood such kind of a state in the mind, then one has to improve that state. Again and again one is continuing one's practice, and again one is experiencing that kind of a release. Now, then one wants to improve that release. So why it is not possible to maintain such a release forever, for the whole lifetime? Because we have so many defilements available in the mind, prevalent in the mind. So then one has to understand those defilements and has to uproot those defilements. So therefore that requires a profound path. So that is nothing but the Noble Eightfold Path. So therefore Buddha recommends Satipatthana Bhavana Gaminicha Patipada. So one is further improving one's mindfulness by following a path. So one understands the importance of the morality, how one needs to maintain one's speech and body in a more free manner, or sorry, more kind of a responsible manner, so that one is not harming oneself or the another person. So one's speech and body is used properly, well restrained. So the sila is coming to the picture. And one can't use understand various defilements in the mind if one's mind is not clear. So one has to have a concentrated mind, well collected mind. So therefore samadhi, concentration, also becomes necessary. Now when everything is available, one has to recognize various defilements when they are popping up, when they are coming up, arising, and then and there one has to remove or purify one's mind from those defilements. So the practicing of wisdom, vipassana, is the other aspect. So sila, samadhi, panya becomes one's path, and one recognizes, so this is the thing to do. It is not that I have to search here and there for the purification, rather I have to purify my own mind. So in order to do that, I have to use morality, otherwise again and again I am polluting the mind. Again and again my mind becomes sort of accusing myself, telling that I am not deserving this kind of a purification. But when I am maintaining very good sila, then I feel I deserve something more. I feel I am worthy of further improvement. So that kind of a positive atmosphere is being generated when we have good sila. And when one is having good sila, morality, that actually promotes or supports concentration, samadhi. So when good samadhi is there, in a way a necessary amount of concentration is there, clarity of mind is there, then one can easily recognize when various defilements are popping up in the mind, arising in the mind. Then we can apply mindfulness, we can apply wisdom, so that again mind become pure, again mind become purified. And one is maintained such free state of mind. So this is not something that we have to understand and then forget it. Rather, in our practical life, we have to use again and again. So therefore, the whole Satipatthana Sutta is a kind of a practical recipe, we can say. It is not just for the memory or just for a intellectual understanding. Rather, it is a complete practice. Complete practical approach we have to use in our own way of life. So therefore we can say this Navasivatika, or the nine stages of a decaying corpse, is also a very important or very strong type of practice one can utilize. And anyway, we have to know the limits of how long we need to use. So once our mind is well balanced, equanimous, we can do more in towards the wisdom based practice, like Dhatu Manasikara, Anapanasati, Iriyapata, because now mind is in a very refined, equanimous state. So with that note, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon or Sutta teaching, and now I would like to open the session for questions.
First time, you may ask question anonymously via the chat, or you may raise your hand to ask your question directly. So Bhante, one of the questions that I received is, dear Bhante, when I feel anxious, I observe the changes in breath. However, after a while, I feel more anxious observing the breath as the breath becomes heavy and uneasy. What can I do to calm the mind and come back to the breath?
Yeah, actually, basically, immediately if you start to sit and keep your attention on breath, it may be difficult. Because that's why we are using various other techniques slowly to bring your attention to the body. Say, for example, you can start listening, outside sounds. So various sounds are there. So rather than we resisting them, we can start to mindfully listen. So mindful listening is very beautiful practice. Yeah, you are simply opening yourself, receiving various sounds rather than hating them. And suppose you can recognize birds chirping, you can recognize humans are talking, maybe wind sound, maybe say animals are shouting, maybe barking, and etc. So likewise, various different sounds you can recognize. More you recognize, start to recognize those different sounds, slowly, your attention is coming to the present moment, because these sounds are coming and going. They don't stay longer. They have the nature to come and go. And you are now at the first stage, we can say we are recognizing various sounds. And once those sounds are not available, slowly we can be in that silence. So this is very interesting. So when sounds are there, we are recognizing those sounds. And once they are not available, so we are simply trying to stay in that silence. So while being in that silence, more and more we can probably bring our attention to the body. How our hands are kept, how our head is maintained, how our upper half of the body is maintained. So likewise, we are sort of doing sort of a scanning of the body. Now we are recognizing different parts, how they are deported. And then slowly you can check rising and falling, because rising and falling is somewhat gross compared to the breathing. So once you are able to recognize rising and falling of the abdomen, so slowly you can use that for some time. Rising and falling being a gross object, it helps us to bind our attention towards the body. And each and every rising and falling, you are paying attention. If necessary, you can even note rising, falling. So likewise, you can mentally verbalize while you are really experiencing it. So ultimately, you may understand now you are within the body. Your mind is not distracted. Slowly, you are fairly focused your attention on the body. And if you like, now you can pay attention even to the breathing. So breathing also may be very subtle, and if necessary, you can maintain your attention there. But actually, it is not a must. It's optional in a way. Because if we are able to maintain your attention on rising and falling, it slowly brings your attention towards Dhatu Manasikara, elements meditation. So therefore, not being able to recognize breathing is not a big hindrance, big obstacle, because there are many ways to overcome that. Yeah.
Thank you, Bente. And for the next question, I'd like to invite Darshika to please ask your question directly.
Bente, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yes, this is. I have some questions regarding my practice, which I'd like to get some answers, and also I want to find out how I can improve my practice further.
Yeah.
I have been practicing for some time under the guidance of Venerable Dhammajiva Thero. Walking meditation. Number one, my walking becomes automatic, anayasin, and I go into this empty state, large space very quickly most days since some time. Number two, in this state, I feel very happy, relaxed, and calm, and light. I was wanting to go to this state and was developing an extra likeness. Hence, now when I go to this state, I try to put to be in Veksa state. That's just a note. Third, I feel detached from the physical body, because it seems as if the body is just walking like a robot. Four, when I am in this state, I call it the mood. Only occasionally I will experience one of the components of the four elements, example, a short vibration or tightness of a limb or pain. It is mainly thoughts that come. When any one of the above comes, I can still continue to be in the same state, but of course I feel like a second person. A detective is noting what's coming and or arising and what's going or disappearing. It doesn't interfere with my mood, as the detective is so sharp and catching my thoughts or noting as soon as the thoughts arise at the end. As they arise at the end, I can't remember what they were. But on some occasions, example, if I get a very sharp pain, it interferes with my mood, and I feel that I have to come down to earth, as the detective has failed to do his job. Then, of course, the response differs depending on the severity. Sometimes while I can still continue to walk, the mind goes to the spot where there is pain and has to watch it very closely. It will disappear also sometime, and I can go back to my mood without any difficulty. But it is the pain. If the pain is very severe, what I do is I focus my attention to where there is severe pain and try to trace towards the beginning. Then it subsides, but the pain will reoccur in another place and so forth. After contemplating like this, if the pain is still continuing and doesn't go away, I get back to the normal walking, or I think this is a dukkha, I can't do anything, it's beyond my control, but it will change and continue the walking, saying it dhamma. Thinking that it's a dhamma. So my question is, first I want to find out whether these are anusaya kelas. Number two is how I can understand, although I can understand the physical bodily phenomena occurring according to the four elements, and it's just continuing to do its own process. But what I can't understand is, how will you explain what is happening to the mental process? As I am not thinking and thoughts just come and go, and I am not manifesting sankhara, I wonder, please Bhante, whether you can explain what is happening to the mental process. Number three is, how can I improve my meditation further?
Yeah, good. So basically you are doing well. So as much as possible, we need to maintain our attention in that free state, because you have mentioned that you are able to maintain sort of a spacious, empty spaciousness. So that is actually become our island. So as much as possible, that is our mindful space, and we have to maintain our attention more there, rather not attention, rather we simply have to live there. So when we are living there, assume that mind get attached to something, because our mind has various habitual tendencies. So again, mind go and grasp something. on such situation, the mindfulness helps us to understand that attachment, and we can simply let it go. Again, mind returns back to that mindful space, mindful spaciousness. So this is the kind of practice we again and again have to continue. And at this level, it is not necessary to go and sort of observe various kinds of phenomena just to understand how they occur, because we already did that. Since we went through such kind of practice for a long time, then actually mind understood that they are impermanent, they are not under my control, and they are sort of suffering. So that's why it has let go of that. So now, once everything has let go of, now mind has become free. So this freedom has to be further developed. So this is this freedom is the, we can say, kind of the oasis. This is the island.
Yes.
So while being there, now we further have to improve our mindfulness, further have to improve our Dhamma Vichaya investigation, our wisdom, our effort. Because even though this freedom we have recognized, still we can't maintain it for a long time. So that is why the Noble Eightfold Path come to the picture, as I discussed even today. So so we recognize there's a kind of a freedom of the mind, but still I can't maintain it for the whole day.
Yes.
Because again and again mind go and attach with something, again and again entangle with something. So this is something we honestly recognize, we humbly recognize. So at that time we have to apply mindfulness, at that time we have to apply wisdom, when mind has grasped. So Buddha very beautifully explained this in the Indriya Bhavana Sutta, where one is encouraged to maintain this equanimity, spacious equanimity. And unfortunately, when we see something, assume that mind get attracted. Again, mind get attached. So now we have to recognize this attached state, this agitated state is rough, is something gross. Because we were in a very simple, unattached, spacious kind of a state. That is very simple in a way. Very, very peaceful. But now this agitated state is very gross, olarika. Agitated state is gross. So once we recognize that agitated state as a gross, grasping, heavy, burden kind of a state, and simply we have to let it go and return back to that unagitated, unattached, peaceful, mindful space. So likewise, there are many different ways Buddha explained how to return back to that mindful space, return back to that island, return back to that spaciousness, that peaceful state of the mind. So this is the practice that we need to further improve. And this is the way, in a way, that we are sort of weakening the anusaya. So why our mind get attracted? That is because the anusaya have given some sort of a triggering, some sort of a stimulation. So that's why immediately they have sort of manifested as pariyutthana kilesa, as the obsessive level, evident level. And as a result, mind go and attach to something. Mind has sort of become a temporary victim to it. But now we have the wisdom and mindfulness and we recognize it. Now we are not promoting that habit. We are not promoting that anusaya. Rather, we recognize it and then simply let it go. So now we are in a process of weakening the anusaya. We recognize it. We recognize how mind go and attach. We see it. We observe it. We recognize it. And slowly we are weakening it. Weakening in the sense we are not promoting it. We are not supporting it. So this is how we need to slowly weaken the anusaya and ultimately uproot anusaya, and more and more try to maintain your mind silent, very quiet, very peaceful, so that even a subtle reaction, even a subtle defilement is visible in the mind. And then you have asked kind of a mental process, so I don't know whether did I answer all the questions, or still you have any question?
Yes, Bhante, you answered all. But I want to know is now when you if some thought comes even, it just clicks that thought came, but I can continue my walking in that space, there's no problem. Do I need to go into this thought? Because sometimes it is so boring and feel so lazy that you feel just now the thoughts and everything are not coming so frequently. So there, I feel that it's like a state where suddenly I get a jerk and then I feel as if I got up and feel so bored. So I can't, I somehow make a point to wait that hour till the alarm goes. So do I need to see what these thoughts are, or as I just doing it, catch it there and just without going into detail,
yeah,
just continue?
Yeah, basically, when you are familiarizing with this state, you better stay there as long as possible. Because even
yes,
though it appear like boring, so
yes,
because our mind is used to agitation. We like excitement. We like various kind of agitation. We like to become sort of sorrowful rather than simply being maintain a kind of equanimity. Because the equanimity appear like boring. No,
yes,
sort of... no incident, no kind of any stimulation appear like boring. So we like to get stimulated, we like to get agitated, we like to get excited. But now in the practice, more and more we are towards the just be, not doing anything, not reacting. So you need to sort of familiarize with that state. It is true that it is boring, it is true that it is kind of a monotony, but we have to slowly familiarize with it. Now say, for example, at the moment you can stay there 15 minutes. No problem. But next time, try to... No, I'm just giving an example. So, if suppose now you... Suppose you can stay there for 15 minutes. Now next time, just improve it. Now, suppose at the end of the 15 minutes, you feel utter bored and that's why you stop it. But next time, try to be there for 16 minutes. Next time 17 minutes, next time 18 minutes. Likewise, you have to further improve, just be. Not doing anything. Not doing anything, just be. But ultimately you may feel bored and maybe the meditation session itself may stop it, may conclude it. So you may feel certain symptoms that now the session is over. Then you can stop it. Rather than you purposely stop the session, let the session take over its own sort of the period and you simply facilitate it. You don't need to purposely stop the session.
So even if I won't keep the alarm, or even if the alarm goes, if I can stay...
Yeah, better stop using the alarm now. Better stop using the alarm now. Because now allow the process to govern the whole thing. Now say, for example... At the beginning, we have the attitude, okay, I need to sit at this time, I need to sit this long. So likewise, we did some sort of a controlling. We did some sort of a manipulation. But now the process is taking over. Now we simply allow the meditation to happen rather than we control. You have heard that Karana Bhavana and Kirana Bhavana. Karana is the one that we do meditate. But now meditation happens. We allow it to happen. So you don't need to use alarm. Rather, you simply sit and allow the process to slowly take over. And you simply maintain a kind of passive role while maintaining the mind in that space, in that unattached state, peaceful state. And as long as it likes, it let it be. Because now this is the kind of building up time. So this is the now time of the energizing time, where your mind is recognizing that peaceful state, recognizing that unattached state. So that you need to facilitate. Later anyway, assume that you can immediately go there, even at while walking you are there, while talking you are there, while doing another thing you are there.
Yeah, I can do that. Like when I'm going in the car, if I want, I can go into that mode.
So that then you need to facilitate that.
Like even now when I'm, last year my aim was to improve Sampajanna. I did achieve it to some extent. This year I'm trying to develop more. So now when I'm brushing my teeth, earlier when I started, I used to think brushing. Then I thought hardness, and the water flowing and that sort of thing. Now I just observe. So yes. I can go into that state and just watch.
Exactly. They are now, since your mind already recognize that freedom, just maintain in that relaxed freedom as much as possible. But within that relaxed freedom, you are brushing the teeth. You don't need to specify your attention to any particular action. Rather keep it sort of pervaded, keep it unattached. So your mind is not going and grasping any kind of a task. Rather, mind is now familiarizing with non-grasping.
Yes. So during the day, during my meditation, even seated, I go into that state. Now, when I'm attending to my daily activities, I know if I mindfulness has been broken, like when last thought comes and all that, then I just go back to see why I got that thought. That is okay.
Yeah, fine. Because there you are recognizing the defilement, no?
So, yes.
Because we couldn't maintain the freedom because mind still become a victim of a kind of a habit, kind of a defilement.
Yes.
So there we have to properly recognize what is the defilement and honestly understand, still I have lust, honestly I have to understand,
yes.
Okay, I have anger. So likewise, so this is a kind of a recognition. And once we recognize it, we can let it go.
Okay. Thank you, Bhante. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thirvan Sarnai.
Okay, for the next question, I'd like to invite Namalka to please ask your question.
Yes, Bhante, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, Bhante, I just concluded a 9-day retreat, a residential retreat, but it was on Zoom by a nun from Sri Lanka called Udagama Therika.
Right.
And after about 4 days of my meditation, I normally have also meditated with Bhante Dhamma Jiva. In Anapanasati, I watch my breath to the very end, and the inhale is very short. But after a while, I don't know what happens. My mind stands still, and I'm as if I'm watching my own consciousness.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I'm able to maintain that maybe for 5-10 minutes at the beginning, but towards the end, it did last a while. But within that concentration, I can feel it sort of going to a peak and then coming down. And then when I asked her at an interview, she said, just watch the coming down.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I'm mindful of the decline of the concentration, but because I'm mindful, the next time it goes further up, I'm more concentrated.
Mm-hmm.
But then it comes down again. Like that, I go on for about 45 minutes. Is that all right or what is it?
No, basically, so at that time, I mean, it is true that you are concentrated. What is the type of object to which that you are concentrated?
When you say object, I'm conscious because I can't feel my presence, but I don't feel my body.
Yeah, so basically you have sort of a concentration, but you can't recognize any prominent object.
No, sometimes if I go beyond the 45 minutes and I have a pain on my knee,
right,
then I visualize my knee and I go into my pain.
Right.
And I just say pain, pain. But the very fact that I'm mindful of the pain, I'm going back to a higher concentration life.
Yes. So can you explain about your walking meditation?
My walking meditation, for the first, say, 5, 7, 8 minutes, I walk fast.
Uh-huh.
Then I say lifting, pushing, dropping.
Mm-hmm.
That another 10-15 minutes.
Yeah.
Then lifting, pushing, down and pressing.
Mm-hmm.
And then that is quite slow.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I found if I do that for about 45 minutes,
yeah,
as I sit down, I get quite concentrated.
Yeah, so basically now you got to relax a little. Now while walking, you can completely stop this manihikirima, completely step this mental verbalization. Rather,
yeah,
allow the mind to softly, quietly watch the whole process.
Okay.
So then, I mean, basically the mind should not be pushed right now. Rather, simply allow to synchronize with the, now you have the watching or the observing mental process as well as the ongoing physical process. You understand that, right? So simply keep your mental process well synchronized with the physical process with a quiet mind, very relaxed mind. So that way allow the mind to see each and every bit of the whole process. Say when you are lifting your leg, so there are series of movements, series of weight, series of lightness, series of heaviness, series of hardness. So likewise, allow the mind to do some sort of a thin slicing of time so that you are recognizing each and every bit of this whole process with a very quiet mind. So we are actually improving sampajanya, clear comprehension. Clear comprehension help us to understand very different aspects of the element characteristics.
Right.
So your mind is well refined, well concentrated, but very quiet, and the whole mental energy being used to recognize various element characteristics, and more and more element characteristics are now visible.
Right.
So
the only normally, I sort of stick to this method. The only difference that I found in her normal in her discussion was that she said when you put your foot down to watch the elements.
Yes.
But I found that a little disturbing at this point.
No, what I am telling you also the same. Now you are recognizing elements.
Right.
So, when you keep a very quiet mind and very closely observing all this physical process, what you are retrieving is nothing but elements.
Right, okay.
Same thing. So actually, this mental verbalization actually hinders at this level. It covers this. That's why.
Yeah.
So that's why I ask you to stop that completely and observe the whole process with a very quiet, pleasant, equanimous mind so that the element characteristics become more evident.
Right. Okay,
so
Bhante, thank you very much. Thank you. I really appreciate it. May you attain this very life.
Okay,
thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And I believe this will be the last question. I'd like to invite Chitra Devi to please ask a question.
Yes, thank you very much. Bhante, I'm just asking a very practical question actually, because we are all doing this meditation and walking and sitting and trying to lead a good life.
Mm-hmm.
But my question really is, we should we not think of something more constructive? I mean, while doing all these things, shouldn't we be thinking now, how do we develop to get into the the first stage of enlightenment? Because we are doing all these things that we normally do in the retreat situation within our availability of time,
mm-hmm.
Shouldn't we be having some kind of just to use a term which you use in the retreat situations, like a time table or something, that in this week we should be doing this, or this month we should be concentrating on this, with a view to going into that state of enlightenment. I'd just like to know what you think of this.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure in the monasteries, a lot of people are trained to do certain things to attain some kind of stage of enlightenment. So we can't, since really people, we are a bit behind on all that, but at least we should try. That's what I think. Anyway, I like your opinion, Bhante. Thank you.
Yeah, so basically we can't do that kind of a strict planning on these things. So that actually can lead to kind of an agitation and the expectations. Actually, if you are trying to achieve something while meditating, then it becomes a hindrance. It becomes a kind of a burden to your practice. Rather, during the practice, you simply have to maintain a beginner's mind. So a very simple, very beginner's mind. So that is where the profound kind of understanding is possible. It is not that I already did this, I already did that, my plan is this, on next week I am attaining Sotapanna, and after one month I am attaining Sakadagami. So likewise, you can't plan like that. Instead, at this very moment, you are simply watching the mind. So at this moment, how is the state of the mind? Is it grasping? Has it sort of burdened? Is it heavy? Or is it light? Is it sort of free from defilements, free from attachment? So like that, each and every moment is a kind of a process of enlightenment. It is not that we are trying to meditate today to become enlightened in the next year. Rather, at this very moment, come back to yourself and check. Is it burning, or is it sort of released? Is it kind of burden, or is it kind of lightness? Is it kind of agitated, or is it free? Is it kind of, entangled, or is it completely unentangled? So likewise, we need to, each and every moment, we have to check what is the state of the mind. So the whole practice, that is why it is, we can say, Buddha very beautifully mentioned in Baddhekaratta Sutta, Pachuppannancha yo dhammang tattva tattva vipassati. At this very moment, there are certain things are happening due to various causes and conditions. So tattva tattva vipassati, there one is doing the vipassana practice. At that very moment, one is applying mindfulness and developing the wisdom. So this is the kind of a process one has to maintain. So if our mind is burdened with kind of a plan, so that is actually become a hindrance.
So, Bhante, I don't interfere with my meditation. I just let it go. And I just, when it comes to meditation and walking meditation, I just let it go, let it happen. So, I don't interfere with any of those things. So, I think I'm doing the correct thing there.
Yes.
But really, I was just sort of talking in terms of in between those periods of time, with family life and work all these other things. Whether there's anything else that we, of course we are living the Dhamma, we are being mindful as within reasonable limits, but mm-hmm. And surely we can't go to put pressure, which I don't, because again that is a very negative, and craving, then craving comes in and then interferes with everything else. I don't allow that to happen, especially in my meditation, but I just wondered whether we could do, you did say to look at the mind in between, and we can look at the mind.
Yes.
Is there anything else that we can do to...
So that's why, Buddha mentioned that about five types of support that one needs to maintain one's sila, morality, and then one has to say listen to Dhamma or read Dhamma so that we know that we are in the correct track. That is the Sutta Anugrahita, that one has to further improve one's knowledge, and then one has to do sort of very good discussion so that we know that we are in the correct path, and if there are doubts, we can remove them. And again, one has to maintain the clarity of the mind, the collectedness of the mind, so that is the concentration practice, the Samadhi Anugrahita, and then continue to practice the Vipassana Anugrahita. So that is why Buddha asks us to, if we consider as the whole picture, big picture, there are five supports Buddha mentioned. Sila Anugrahita, Sutta Anugrahita, Sakachanugahita, Samatha Anugahita, and Vipassana Anugahita. Sila Anugahita is that we are maintaining good morality. Sutta Anugahita is that we are sort of doing some preference and sort of comparing our practice with the Buddha's teaching and listen to Dhamma, read books, so that we know that we are in the correct path. Sakaccha Anugahita is the discussion, that we do some good discussions and again we are clarifying various doubts, again we are putting in the correct track. And Samatha Anugahita is the development of the concentration, maintaining the correct amount of concentration. Vipassana is the continuing one's own practice, mindfulness practice. So we basically have to maintain all these supports at proper times. So when we are continuing our practice with all these five supports, then Buddha says one has the potential to develop higher understanding. So therefore, we need to maintain these supports. And it is true that we have to have kind of an aim. I want to become enlightened. No, I want to be free from samsara. So that's a kind of a light-weighted kind of a direction has to be there in the mind. But during the practice, we have to have a very, very soft, very gentle approach, very mindful approach, beginner's approach, so that we are able to have a unburdened mind during the practice. I think you are doing well, and it's a matter of continuing one's practice, so the results will naturally happen.
Yes, Bhante, I think I'm doing all those five supports. Very mindful of those. I am doing it, especially in this corona period where we were able to work from home also, you know, at times.
Yeah.
So I am doing all of that. So anyways, right. So what you're saying, well, I think from listening to what you're saying, I'm doing the correct thing. So that's all that we can do. You know, we can't do anything more than that.
Yeah. The thing is, we can't forcefully get the results. Rather, we are preparing the causes and conditions.
Mm.
So the results has to happen naturally when we are continuing the practice. The necessary quality is being developed. And when they reach us to some culmination, the results may be available.
Yes, but yeah. I think that in a positive manner, it's a good thing to have this goal behind.
So that's the kind of a direction.
In a soft way.
Yes.
Not to force. I don't do any of those things now. I mean, when we were much younger, we used to do all of those things, you know, wanting this and that.
Yeah.
But now all of that has been dropped and everything's rather soft in many ways. Because you see, we want to use this very life to achieve whatever we can achieve.
Yeah, definitely. That's right. I mean, that's kind of a goal, kind of an aim is useful, so that we are not sort of wavering in this and that. So that aim actually will defined as we continue. Because even the aim become, you know, kind of matured as we continue. Now, say for example, at the beginning of our practice, we consider Nibbana like this, Nibbana like that. So we have a kind of a vision. And after some amount of practice, so that vision may change. Okay, this has to be like this, this has to be like that. So when compared to the previous vision, previous view, present view is more matured. Now, suppose you do another more practice. After that, it becomes more matured. So likewise, our aim also subjected to change based on our understanding.
Yes, Bhante, because the Buddha said, you know, that which we think most frequently becomes part of our our way of life, is it?
Yeah,
so
true.
We have to have those positive thoughts, don't we, Bhante?
Yes. Having positive thoughts are all right. So that becomes the, say, Nekhamma Sankappa, Avyapada Sankappa, Avihinsa Sankappa. So those are the ones that Buddha recommend. And basically when one is continuing one's practice, so the one benefit of Satipatthana practice is that the path become clear and clear. So your doubts become less and less. So your path become more clear. And you are sort of, you yourself get to know, okay, this is the thing that I got to do. Something like that. So you become confident of what you are doing.
Yes, Yes, Bhante. Yeah. Thank you for that.
Okay, you're welcome. Okay, I think we have spent 1.5 hours. I think this is the time to wind up. So we all get together and participated in the Dhamma discussion session and again went through an interesting sutta from the Buddha. So this way we are able to accumulate a lot of merits. Let's share these merits with all the beings and we wish all the beings be well and happy. We'll recite the traditional verses. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasattha ca bhummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkantu sasanam. Akasattha ca bhummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkantu desanam. Akasattha ca bhummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkantu mamparam. Idam vo nyatinam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyatinam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyatinam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satam samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.